Well, he did. He came back with these two very long, skinny bottles. And I said, wow, this is pretty smooth. He goes, yes. He says, but JP, I ran across this guy named Francisco Alcaraz down there that says he can make it smoother. Really? And I was doing pretty good at Paul Mitchell. So Martin found these bottles, which is a Patron bottle today, and it could be made out of recycled glass. So I said, great, let's do this. Let's get the recycled glass bottles and let's get like maybe recycled glass cardboard to put it in, you know, of course the colored one and all, and the paper, all there, all, you know, recycled paper. Let's do that. And I'll go ahead and I'll bankroll 12,000 bottles. That's 1,000 cases, right? And let's see what happens. Well, we brought it into the United States, and to our surprise, nobody wanted to carry it. Nobody. Why did they want to carry it? Because it was $37 a bottle in 1989, and the average tequila was $4 or $5 a bottle.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. John Paul DeGioia is the son of immigrants. He was brought up extremely poor in Los Angeles, but he was always someone who was proud. Today, he's an American entrepreneur, a billionaire, and a philanthropist, best known as the co-founder of Paul Mitchell line of hair products and the Patron Spirits Company. He sold Patron 2 years ago to Bacardi for a reported $5.1 billion. Not bad for a guy who was homeless two times in his life. One time because he was too proud to go home and live with his mom, instead opting to spend his nights sleeping in his car and his days making sales calls for Paul Mitchell. Not bad for a man who held a series of jobs, including janitor and door-to-door encyclopedia salesman for over 4 years. John Paul epitomizes an American success story on every level. He has so much knowledge to share with the world, including what he feels it really means to be successful. He is someone who can tell all of us the truth of how success is really measured. And as you could imagine, it's not only in dollar signs. This was an interview I was really excited to do, and John Paul DeGioia did not disappoint. There was so much to talk about with John Paul, but I wanted to start with the state of the hair salon industry as it has been decimated in many ways by COVID. There was no one better to give us thoughts on the future of the business than John Paul.
It's a good monitor on where the economy is and where it's going and how people think. Folks that go to salons, and it's about 70% of the population between 18 and I think 40, 58, go to salon average once every 3 months, are used to it. When they were shut in all of a sudden, let's take hair color, the regrowth was coming out. Well, the message I gave to everybody is this: you're staying at home, your salon is closed, okay? Nobody cares. It's okay. You're better off. And if you don't know what you're doing, don't go down and grab something from the drugstore to use temporarily, because if you screw up, it's going to take you twice as long to make it right. Hang in there, call your salon, make a quick appointment. Well, this worked out good for salons because they were inundated as the various areas opened up. Now, what's interesting for people to know is whether it's in a Paul Mitchell beauty school or salons as we have them today, they know how to sanitize and take care of things. Immediately, salons got very innovative. They put up these plastic partitions in between the various chairs, took the sanitary necessary for the mask, for the hands, the gloves, wiping everything down, similar to what they were taught in school, only more so. Now, I want to go now as well as in the future. By doing this and knowing how to do it and having various innovative ways to run your business, if this pops up again, we're totally prepared. Yeah. And I'll give you an example of this. When things got pretty tough in a couple of states about 2 months ago, what some innovative salons did was, no problem, let's have you on the internet and you have an appointment. And you could actually, we only have so many people in the salon, you could stay in your car, listen to music, you could text your friends, email, whatever you do. And then all of a sudden it'll pop up when your time is up. Within 3 minutes will take you. So it's there. They're very innovative in what they do. with education, because during this time, a lot of people stayed at home. That most of the industry did, because most of the industry was shut down in the United States. And our sales went down because we're in the salon industry, period. However, it gave us the opportunity, maybe other companies the opportunity, to give them more education. And that's from us. They don't pay for it. Like, we're going to give you more education. Here's a topic. Let's discuss it. Here's what this salon is doing. Here's what that salon is doing. Now, we're going through all this, and this is good to share with all your entrepreneurs. We wanted to make sure that not only we stayed in business, but salons thought about going back into business, not, oh my God, I have no inventories now. I don't have any money now. What am I going to do? We wanted to address both. So one of the things we did that a lot of people don't do and they should do is we called our vendors. Called the vendors on the phone and said, hey, it's us. We want you to know we're in business. We are staying in business, okay? And we're going to get over this together, but you hang on in there because there's light at the tunnel and we are it. This meant the world to our vendors, the world to them, saying, oh my God, that phone call, I have no idea what it meant. Yeah, things are tough now. And yes, your orders from us are less than they were before because of the situation. But by gosh, you're in there. So they know that you're going to be there for them. And that's very important. Salons, we want to do the same thing, because we know what went through their minds. So we let our salons know, these are the loyal Paul Mitchell salons.
Yeah.
For 40 years, you've been loyal to us. We have stayed one way or another in the professional beauty industry, so salons always benefit, okay? It's our time to say hello to you. So here's two things we did. One thing we found out was that a lot of the little salons, even though they qualified for this government money, weren't getting it. We qualified overboard, right? However, we sent a letter out to the various governors and the state saying this, we qualify. And by the way, we qualify, we're pretty big, for almost $3 million a month. That's $6 million over 2 months, right? We said, but we don't want the money.
Wow.
We're going to do it ourselves. We, the owners of the company, myself and my partner, Angus, okay? We're going to pay for it out of our own pocket. We're not going to ask for government money. But because we're not doing this, please go back, look at your local funds, and pull the little salons up there. Pull beauty salons up there instead of, you know, just everybody else or bigger companies, because they need it the most. And when they go back to work, everybody goes back to work. When they survive, more people survive.
Are you able to? Did the government really take those funds and pour them into small mom and pop?
We don't know. We just had a big wish out there and saying, we're paying for it ourselves.
Yeah.
We're not asking for any money. The other thing was salons. How do we make sure that our customers go back into business? Well, one, by communicating with them on a regular basis over social media, that was extremely helpful. With our Paul Mitchell schools, there's over 100 in the United States. A lot of what we did, classroom work, was easy. It was done over social media. So that got that part out of the way with them. But then now the next thing is, you're a salon owner. You've been closed down for a month or two. You have very, very little inventory. You want to open up. You want to go back into business. We thought, what the heck, let's just do something nice. We took about $4 million worth of inventory, shampoos for the back bar, even hair color, right?
Yeah.
Conditioners, whatever, and gave it to salons free.
Wow.
No strings attached. So when they went back to work, they would have literally tens of millions of dollars worth of services they could form off the products we gave them. You owe us nothing. Then we thought, but let's let our salons and our distributors think long-term. So we made some deals with our distributors where we gave them dating on the products so they could get more products in there to give the salons. And then they, in return, would give salons some dating. So now salons have a little more time to pay their bill. This way, our distributors were very excited. We helped them get a jump start. Salons were thrilled. We received more letters than one could ever imagine on how that stimulus package we gave them free. Not only by saying thank you for supporting Paul Mitchell all this time, but by gosh, thank you for being in our industry.
And I love that, because you really were looking out for the industry. And I think that's a really smart play, because it's not great when there's other products that are going out of business or salons. Obviously, they're your customers.
That's right.
I love the fact you picked up the phone, and that's such a lesson for entrepreneurs. Just pick up the phone, talk to your vendors who
that's
you
right.
can speak with, and they'll understand this is unprecedented time. So I love how you did that. And I want to ask you, because you've done so much in this time, how are salons going to, what are they going to look like? And I know you kind of gave a little bit of this, but going forward, is this kind of a quick fix and then it'll go back to how we knew it? Or is this really going to change salons for 5-10 years?
I would say what they're doing now is finding ways to simplify being hygienic. And that's what they're doing. because the main thing is they're wiping everything down. Very easy to do. When the masks come on and off, I guess, you know, the medical industry or our government, whatever, will decide that. Hopefully the medical industry decides the right thing to do. So with or without masks, who knows going forward. But all the other hygienic things, there's no reason you have to take them out. No reason at all. If there is a reason where, hey, everything's fine now, whatever, they know they can instantly put it right back up again by just sticking it all in the closet. It's that simple. But most of them, I think, will leave quite a bit up because in most cases, it's not interfering whatsoever and just gives you a very long-term health reason for being in your salon besides looking really good. And that's another thing. There were many surveys done. You hear about them on television stations. Yeah. How people at home all of a sudden started getting claustrophobic, mentally didn't feel good, started fighting more. There's more abuse and all that. When people get out and have a chance to look good, go to your salon, go to your barber shop, feel really good, your attitude changes and your health changes. The happier you are, the healthier you're going to be.
And I totally agree. I think the mental angle or mental impact of this pandemic is going to be so great. I hate to say so much greater, but just what you said, going to the salon, feeling good, going out at night and just walking out of there. And it's funny because what you said, like my wife and a lot of her friends tried to do the thing at home and they're all wearing baseball caps now because, you know, we're in New York City, but they're opening up now, which is great. But I want to talk about you because you're a first generation American. You started this business, from what I'm told, with $700, you and your partner.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible because it's the American dream. And I'm not even going to get into Patron. We'll get there. But what was that like? Can you go back? Because we have so many entrepreneurs who start their own business, starting their own businesses. What was that like? Can you recall that those times?
I recall so vividly. It was so exciting. We're going back now to January, February 1980. Inflation in the United States is 12.5%. Unemployment, 10.5%. Interest rates, if you could get a loan, prime rate was 17%. Wow. And our houses were still in Iran, and you had to wait in line to get gasoline. Not a good
thing. Yeah, I remember.
I'd worked for other companies, and my partner, Paul Mitchell, was a great hairstylist. He was like one of the real entrepreneurs. Not a businessman, but an incredible creative human being. We were the best of pals for 9 years. So we said, hey, with my knowledge of management, business, and product formulation, and yours is one of the top hairdressers, what is right for the hair, what isn't? Let's get together. I'll raise the money. And, you know, Paul, you could own 30% of the business. I'll own 30% of the business. And we had 60. And then where we get our money, we'll own the other 40%. Well, we needed $500,000. This is 1980, right?
That's pretty, yeah.
And we thought we had a backer. So I left everything I did, left the newer car with my situation, and things weren't going very good with me and my wife at the time. So I said, no problem. Left her the house, left her enough money for several months, and the better car, the newer car, and took the other car down the hill, right? Because the money was coming in. And I would just check into the Tropicana Hotel in Ventura Boulevard, you know, for a week. It's cheap, until I found an efficiency and I had a few $100 in my pocket. So I go down the hill, right, to Bank of America, Universal City. The money didn't come in.
Oh my God.
So that night, about 5:30, 6 o'clock, a friend of mine, I went to El Torito, and my friend knew I would be there because 99-cent margarita and you get these chicken wings and chips, right? That's when they started happy hour. Anyways, my friend found me there. He found me because we didn't have cell phones in those days.
Yeah.
Just giant things, right? Anyway, he says, JP, you got to give Dick Holthouse a call. He's in England now. He says, call it at any hour. He's got some not of the best news for you. So I call and collect. He says, JP, there's another way to tell you this. The guy backed out at the last minute. That's why no money came into to you guys today. And here's why. He pointed out the inflation in the United States, the unemployment in the United States, and things were very uncertain with hostages and you're waiting in line for gas. He says, just not a good time. So, oh my gosh. Yeah. Anyways, in the meantime, my partner flew over. Paul flew over from Hawaii. He lived in Hawaii with his girlfriend, Jean. And of course, I was here in Los Angeles at the time. And being in Los Angeles at the time, I was right in the middle of everything where the bottle guy was there, everybody was there. Paul came over because he was on his last few dollars. He was a little bit older than me, okay? But he came over to get some cash too.
And he's expecting the money was going to be there, I assume.
Oh my God, there's nothing there. So it's interesting how sometimes during times of confusion, or times of uncertainty, if you believe in yourself, that's hope. So I said to Paul, I said, Paul, how much money can you throw in? He said, JP, I've got to get back to Hawaii. He says, I have very little, maybe $350. I go, I only had a few hundred dollars in my pocket. So my mom lived in LA. So I drove to my mother's house. I didn't tell her how bad things were. I just said, Mom, I have this new business I'm starting. Can I borrow $350? Because I needed a few hundred in my pocket to live off of. She says, why? You're doing good in business. I had a consulting business. She didn't know I left it because it wasn't going as good as it should. She didn't know that. And I was too proud. I was very proud, too proud, stupid, to say, Mom, can I live here for the next month or two? My room is empty still, and you're the best cook in the world. I was so proud, I couldn't tell her. Stupid, but I couldn't tell her, right? So what did I do? I thought, what the heck? I've been here once before in my early 20s. I slept in my car. My car was my bedroom. I found out how for 99 cents to go to Freeway Cafe after 9 in the morning and
wow,
you know, pull a breakfast. Then after 4:30, go back to El Torito, 99 cent margarita. But you know, 10, 15 chicken wings later and a bunch of salsa, you are just fine. So
you can sleep in the car for the night.
Nobody knew. Nobody knew how bad things were but Paul and I. We were the only two that knew how bad things were. So I went to the original vendors, like Setco, where we had 100,000 bottles on order and 100,000 to go to the silk screen and to our filler with our formula. Everything was set up because we said, look what we're doing. Here's what I've done in the industry. And I had some pretty good jobs in executive positions in the industry before. And Paul was a very well-known top hairdresser. So we already arranged prior to this bad news, like a month prior, 30-day billing, 30-day billing, 30 day billing, 30-day billing, but on 100,000 bottles each. Well, we knew we didn't have any money to promote that much.
Right.
So I called them all on the phone, good old telephone, and said, hey, it's me, JP. Instead of 100,000, how about we get a sample order of just 10,000 bottles now? Then I could have 3,000 of this, 3,000 of that, and 4,000. They go, sure, of course, that makes sense. I called the silk screener, told them the same thing. I told the filler, told them the same thing. So from the time I said, okay, send them to get the artwork, which where all the money went, the guys took all of our money for just the artwork. By the way, that's why it was black and white. We couldn't afford color, okay?
Amazing.
Anyways, we gave them all the money. We had almost nothing left now. But now from the time we called the bottle man to the time he got into the look screener to the time the bottles were filled, it was 2 weeks, meaning that the first bill for the bottles was due in 2 weeks and we didn't have any money. So I piled product in my car, sent some product over like 1 week delayed to Hawaii. So Paul, he was living in Hawaii at the time, he could sell the salons there. And in Los Angeles, I went up Ventura Boulevard, which has a lot of salons. So we decided we're going to be in the salon industry because number one, we don't have a bunch of money. And number two, hairdressers know a darn good product.
Yeah.
So if you get in the hairdresser's hands, they'll know it's good and reorder. So I drove up Ventura Boulevard, calling on salon, salon after salon. Many said, why do we need you? We have all these big lines, you know, but thank you very much. So it took me about a week to get the first 12 orders, maybe a little more than a week. They were anywhere from $27 to I think 125, you know,
but wow.
But I had these orders in my hand. So I delivered the product to him with the orders. And then I went to the biggest beauty distributor in Los Angeles, Paris Ace Beauty Supply, and said, hey, here's our new product. You know, we came out with it. How would you like to be our exclusive distributor for all of LA and Orange County? And the guy was Jim Henrietta, was the president. And he laughed.
He says,
you guys have no advertising budget. I know you've been in the industry and your partner's a top hairdresser. He says, but we have all these big lines. You know, we're owned by one of the biggest companies in the world. We own all these big lines. Thank you, but no, we're not going to spend money promoting you a new line when there's nothing behind it but you guys, the product. I said, I have a reason why you should do that. And he goes, okay, because I thought this one out. I put in front of him 12 orders. When they wrote me those checks, I left the line blank. They left it blank. I said, here's your first 12 customers. And if you'll buy only $2,000, we were really hard up. If you'll only buy $2,000 from us, I'll not only come back and sell it with your salesman every single day, but you can have the exclusive on LA and Orange County. He laughed and said, I'll say, boy, you guys are really hard up, man. He goes, you know what he says? I'm going to do it. He says, but you better show up tomorrow. I said, I will. I said, after it arrives, you better show up. I said, I will. And then I said, by the way, I have one more thing to ask you. He goes, okay. I said, we're just a startup. Can you pay your bill when the products are delivered? He laughed and said, we're Paris Ace Beauty Supply. We don't pay our bills for 45 days. You got me. No, you'll get paid, but no. So I said, what if we do this? And I'd already known this before I came in. That'd be my reaction. I knew that would be coming. So I built it into the price. New entrepreneurs building their price. I said, how about I give you an additional 5% discount immediately? They equates to about 60% a year. He laughed his head off and says, oh, okay, I'll do it. Well, we invited him 15 years ago to our 25th anniversary, and he came over and he says, well, what happened after that was JP left my office. He says, and within 5 minutes or less, my warehouse man intercom me and said, hey, I got this guy back here just unloaded product on our dock or shipping dock and wants a check for $2,000. He said he ran around back laughing his head off, saying he was just in my office. Gave us a check, and that's how we kind of got started. Now, do we pay our bill on time? No, we were 2 or 3 days late, but at least we're able to pay it. And I'll throw this out there because we've had a lot of failures along the way. A lot of people that didn't pay us. We really have some trials and tribulations, not just with Paul Mitchell, but things I tried to start before that that just didn't quite work out. But we knew what we had was a good thing. So a lot of people say, when do you know you made it? Guys, what was the tipping point? And I remember it as clear as can be. We're 2 years old, so now we're towards the latter part of 1981. We did so well that for the first time in our first history of a couple years, we paid our bills on time, Robert. We actually paid them on time. They weren't a month old. We didn't pay them off, but we paid them on time. And we had $2,000 each left in the bank for a dividend. And we said, we have it made. Yay. We paid our bills on time. We have some cash.
That's a lot of margaritas. A lot of margaritas you guys could get. But I love that because, first off, I can only imagine the guy who walked away from that investment 25 years later being really upset. But you know what I love? It's so gritty. It's so like, and just like you said, having to spread out payments. But one thing I noticed in what you're telling me, and I don't know if this is something that's really one of your biggest assets, it seems like you always thought out what the next move, what the next step was going to be. So you weren't left, like when you were in this guy's office, you weren't left with just with questions. It was like you had thought it out. Was that something you've always prided yourself on? Has that really helped you in business, really being prepared?
That's interesting that you would ask such a question. I can tell you where I learned it. I learned it when I was in my late teens, actually early 20s. I just got in the Navy. I was selling Collier's Encyclopedias door-to-door commission only. Don't make a sale, you make no money. But while you're being trained, they're going to give you every excuse not to let you through the door. So you're prepared for it so you know what to say. So from my encyclopedia days, I carried it forward. The average life of an encyclopedia salesman with Collier's was 3 days. For almost 4 years, I did pretty good. But wow. I believe they said, if you knock on 100 doors and 100 doors are slamming in your face, you have to be just as enthusiastic on door number 101. And I was, I believed them. Other guys after 10 doors said, I don't want to do this anymore. Goodbye, this commission only. But I believe, I was a young guy, believed what they said, and it was true.
Do you think persistence is one of the most important traits of successful entrepreneurs?
Definitely, because people will say no to you in many cases, and they'll say no for many reasons. Some of them are, well, I'm not convinced enough, okay? And if you, as soon as you realize that, you're going to get rejection, you have a different attitude, especially with the entrepreneurial classes that I do in some of the colleges and some of the prisons throughout the United States, is we talk about the two things that it takes to be really successful. Number one is, be prepared for a lot of rejection. You're going to get it. Those in prison, you've already gotten in your life. Maybe that's why some of you are here. Those who are starting out, rejection. We're all going to get rejection. But if we know where to get it, one, we prepare for it. Number two, if something new came along we did not prepare for, we'll know what to say next time, but it won't get you down. If you know you're going to get rejection, you won't give up. You'll just keep on going. The second thing was never to go into the selling business. Most people's mindsets are, I want to sell this service or I want to sell this physical product. Well, and that's, what do we do to get it out, get someone to buy it, right? My philosophy was different. My philosophy was go into the reorder business. We had to with Paul Mitchell, where your products, your shampoo, conditioner, sculpting lotion was so good. Salons will not only want to reorder it, but also turn their customers on to it. And that's how we approach it. That's how we approach Patron. So I say to the whole community out there of entrepreneurs, one, be ready for rejection. You're going to get it. Don't let it get you down, okay? Be just as excited on door number 101 or door number 105 or door number 50 with that enthusiasm. And make sure your service, even if it's a one-time service, your product is so good. People talk about it, recommend it to others, and want it for themselves.
I love that. And going back with Paul Mitchell, when, you know, I know you talked about that early days and having a couple thousand distribution and you really felt great,
but
it's awesome. And when was it when you were like, wow, we've created a major or a big business here. Did you ever feel like that? Was that part of like...
Yes, we did. Well, that's interesting to say that. Paul and I, we're just humble people. We started out, we thought, God, if only with all of our influence, we could build a business that grosses $5 million a year. We would each make $250,000. And 1980, that was a lot of money. It was still a lot of money. Yeah. My God, okay, still a lot. We would have life made. So we're going to do everything we can. But as we did it, we learned and learned and learned. Me more at the business and Paul, what worked best for shows and such. He was a great showman, by the way, an unbelievable educator. We learned along the way so that when we surpassed the 5 million to 10 million, 15 million and so forth, we were learning what to do and also learning who to hire and put in various places. I used to do 90% of everything until one day I just can't do this. And I got people that were better than me. Another lesson to learn. If you're building a business, always try and find people as good, hopefully better than you are. I tell my management that seemed the same thing. Guys, don't worry about not hiring somebody because they may be better than you. That's what I want in management. Someone that'll recognize someone that has that potential to be even better than they are. And I found that in a whole bunch of great people that came on board with Paul Mitchell and including our president of many, many years, CEO Lou Jacobellis. We got him back in the 1980s when we needed help with our warehouse. We brought him on in from Xerox, and we turned out this guy knows more than all of us put together. We can't pay you a lot. He goes, sure, you guys seem like fun. And Luke is just one of the best guys. And many other members of our team were exactly the same way.
That's incredible. Now, you've never sold the business. How come? Because I can only imagine these huge CPG companies would be salivating to get to you guys. How come?
Robert, beautiful question, okay? They have come to us. We've been offered more money for John Paul Mitchell Systems than any company in the professional beauty industry. And the answer is no. And I could go back to maybe 15, 20 years ago with one of the big giant companies. I won't mention his name out of respect to them. They were buying people left and right in my industry. They said, this is crazy. We want to pay you more than anyone has ever paid anybody for the professional company. And you won't have to do anything for the rest of your life unless you wanted to. You know, that's enough money to, you know, you're just set for everything. And I said, no. They said, why? I said, because when I had absolutely nothing, we promised hairdressers that we'll be the first company to stick by them and not say, hey, we're only going to be sold in salons and all of a sudden it's elsewhere. Or no, we did this just for you. Or my wife made me sell the company. So here's my next company I'm coming out with just for you, period. We said, we're not going to do that. We will always stay, even as things change one way or another in the professional beauty industry, no matter what. Well, please support us. They did. And they believed us. So my feeling is, guys, I owe you. Even if most of you are gone and your bones turned to dust, I owe you. I own the majority of John Paul Mitchell Systems, and I believe we're the largest privately owned salon hair company in the world.
Gotta be.
But I have the majority. In 2004, I was doing a seminar for several hundred people, 1,000 actually, and a young lady in the front row raised her hand. It was a student. She says, Mr. DiGiore, we know your history. You've never sold our industry out. No matter what you do, it somehow goes back to beauty salons where they benefit. What if you die? I said, whoa. You know, Paul, your partner died 5 years. You know, what if you die? You know, what's going on here? But that was a very, very good point. So I researched it and I found a trust that's a United States of America trust that lasted 360 years. So I took the majority interest of the company, which is more than 50%, and I put it in a 360-year trust. Wow. So you think if something happens to me, no one in particular in my family can run this company. It's run by the trust. However many grandkids or great-great-great-great-grandchildren are in the future, they get their little divided part up, whatever that may have been, but that nobody could sell the company. You had to put a lower on it. So the low was so low that, you know, sales were over under a million or two, whatever. The company was under that. Well, that's not going to happen, obviously.
Yes.
But it was so well protected that the hairdressers were that well protected. And I said, and the reason I'm doing this is, guys, especially the big companies that kept on coming at me, and the word spread to everybody. And boy, the multiples we were giving, woo! I would have been sitting there way before for Trump, but anyways, didn't do it. Anyways, so we told them all this. When we had absolutely nothing, enough hairdressers believed in us that we were telling the truth. We're not going to let them down. We're sticking by them. And that's what the industry knows right now. You know, they say, that's pretty good. You know, you may be the most ethical people ever in this industry because even for all the money, you're just saying no. But we also know that if someone goes to a beauty salon, they'll get a recommendation for great products, but not just what the product is, how to use it to maintain your hairstyle in between visits. And that's one of the things Paul Mitchell products were famous for. We made products in such a way that the hairdresser could say, use this sculpting lotion, this freeze and shine spray, or this tea tree this way for the best results. And they would show them while they're using it. Now the customer would go home with a maintenance package, which meant the hairdresser is now in their hands. Because they remember I got that from the hairdresser, they go back and get it. So even during this virus shutdowns for many salons were calling their customers saying, hey, we have a pickup service here or delivery service for Mitchell Hair Care products to keep you in line.
How did you, like you said, when you first started that first order with your 12 customers, which
those 12 orders, 12 orders.
it's genius the fact you left off like, you know, that could have been like the whole turning point, leaving off the price, knowing 12 orders. And it wasn't, and this guy seemed like a real good-natured guy where he saw how you were hustling. I love just, you have to be crafty and you have to be smart with starting a business. But one thing he said at that time, he's got 12 other products or some number of products that's early in those salons, right? How did you become the, like, whenever I walk into a salon, and I barely do, I go for my wife because she can see my hair, but like, it's always Paul Mitchell. How did you knock those guys out?
Well, it wasn't that it was always Paul Mitchell. I wish it was always Paul Mitchell today. That'd be great. So there, you know, quite our competitors are there also. But the reason you see Paul Mitchell grow more and more is because beauty salons realized we're 100% behind them. And we don't test products in the beauty industry and then all of a sudden turn around in the retail industry, put it under another name. They know, because even, for example, like we're on Amazon, right? But the way we went on Amazon, they were really good about this, was that any product sold, we know the area codes on, zip codes, everything else, but a percentage of every product sold on Amazon went right back to the beauty industry, to salons, went right back to salons. So even with today's changing days, we were able to find a way to do it. And for us, it worked out great because there was a couple thousand people selling Paul Mitchell products on Amazon. Some were the real Paul Mitchell. They were selling out the back door. Some were very old. And some of them, unfortunately, were counterfeit. They do a darn good job of counterfeiting. So one good thing that someone like Amazon did with us is they realized how pure we are, how we really care about salons more than anything else. So part of our agreement with these nice folks was they eliminated everyone else off the internet to make sure it was the real Paul Mitchell, unless we said, yes, this is us, or this is our real product. So it would be never, well, there's counterfeit or there's whatever being sold. They were very decent about it. And many times in business, if you talk to some of your people you want to do business with, just be very honest with them why you want to do certain things. And these people were respectful, honorable, and said, you guys are some of the most ethical people we've ever run across. My God, we're glad you're on here. What can we do to work together here in the future?
Let's talk about Patron, because I read somewhere in 2018, maybe it was sell $5 billion. Mm-hmm. Is that the price tag?
It's public information. But
yeah, that's the only reason I bring it up. Because
when it was sold, the company's value was $5.1 billion when it was sold, and I had about 70% of the company.
Wow. So how did that start? Because I could tell you like margaritas, because early on, that's what was saving you, you know, from in the hairstyle.
They gave me dinner and gave me a free, but they weren't Patron margaritas.
No, you couldn't afford them at that time.
No, what happened with Patron is after I started Paul Mitchell, I tried to start a couple of other things and they just didn't work out in communications, oil and gas, just different things I invested in, actually tried to invest in, and it didn't work out as good as I wanted to. But this one fellow named Martin Crowley was introduced to me by someone that's going to build this family estate for me in California. This is back in the late 1980s. And he lost money in the hospitality business. He went bankrupt. So my builder brought him to me and said, he's very, very creative. And I spoke with Martin, and Martin was very creative. So I bankrolled him in what we would call the architectural business. He went down to Mexico, bought pavers, stonework, and furniture, came back to the United States, and sold it to restaurants, bars, or architects for their model homes. It's a little niche business. We were doing okay, but we weren't really making money. We were just barely surviving. And one day he was with me, and I was in California at the time. This is 1988 going to 89. And he was going down to buy some pavers and some other things. And I said, well, Martin, this is 89, actually. And I said, Martin, while you're down there, why don't you bring back a couple bottles of what the aristocrats drink? Because at that time, we were drinking what we thought was the best tequila, but you still had to hold your breath, you know.
Of course.
But now it's a little different.
Oh, yeah.
So he did. He came back with these two very long, skinny bottles. And I said, wow, this is pretty smooth. He goes, yes. He says, but JP, I ran across this guy named Francisco Alcarez down there that says he can make it smoother. really? And I was doing pretty good at Paul Mitchell. So Martin found these bottles, which is a Patron bottle today, and it could be made out of recycled glass. So I said, great, let's do this. Let's get the recycled glass bottles and let's get like maybe recycled glass cardboard to put it in, you know, of course, the colored one and all, and the paper, all they're all, you know, recycled paper. Let's do that. And I'll go ahead and I'll bankroll 12,000 bottles. That's 1,000 cases, right? And let's see what happens. Well, we brought it into the United States, and to our surprise, nobody wanted to carry it. Nobody. Why did they want to carry it? Because it was $37 a bottle in 1989, and the average tequila was $4 or $5 a bottle. And I'll tell you this story, it's very interesting. And then, of course, the best one we could find was $14. We'd charge $37. So what did we do? We went back to knocking on doors, and we discovered, Martin called on everybody, I called on everyone I could. Martin found this wine distributor. All they distributed was wine. He used my name. Hey, John Paul DeGioia, Paul Mitchell, my friend, you know, would you like to be our distributor? We'll do your, he'll come down and do your sales meeting, everything, which we did. So, and they took us on. But we also threw in a caveat. I said, I could probably get Spago's, which was the number one restaurant in Beverly Hills, to take it. And Martin said, I could buy a cantina. Well, we knew we already got them because we gave them bottles. Wolfgang said to me, oh, JP, this is good stuff. I want to give it to my customers. And buy a cantina for Martin, same thing. They let us put on little shows and tasting programs there. These are our buddies, right? They're cool people. So they said, oh, really? We'll take it. After a little over a year, they weren't doing good at all. I think they were doing like maybe 1,500, 2,000 cases a year, which isn't a lot. And they said, guys, that's the most we could do. We're not in the business. So we went to a real big company like Jim Beam. They're big. So they have, you know, their own whiskey everywhere.
Sure.
So what we did with them was we made them a master distributor, which they've done for other companies where, guys, you are a master distributor. And through your force, we'll not go through all of your accounts, right? You know, you're distributors. And we did that. A couple of years go by and we had to have a little talk with the people there and said, guys, you're only, I think they were doing maybe 12, maximum 13,000 cases a year. Yes. We said, man, we know we got the potential for at least 40, 50 or more. And they said, guys, let us tell you the truth, okay? You do have the best tequila in the world, but the most you're ever going to sell, lesson for entrepreneurs, the most you're going to ever sell is 20,000 cases a year. That's the most you're going to do, guys. You have the best, but it's $37.95 a bottle by that time, right? Or maybe $38, all right? Anyways, guys, you have the best, and it's best, there's no doubt, but it's too expensive for the majority of people, and the fine connoisseurs will get it. Well, we decided that let's look for another distributor, and we did, and we found Seagram's. That's before Seagram's broke up. Seagram's took it on and built it up to, oh, just under, I think, 70,000 cases a year. And we decided that we thought we could do a better job. So we went to court with them and bought them out. We had a court settlement. We bought them out, and we took over distribution. Now, something for all entrepreneurs to learn. The brand that was told by a major, and they're a good company, that every reason to say that, you'll never do more than 20,000 cases a year. When Patron was sold a couple of years ago, it was doing, just with the tequila alone, over 3 million cases, 3 million cases a year, approaching 4 million. If you throw all the other things we had in, there are rums and things like that, approaching 4 million cases. So, and that's when it was sold. Now, did I want to sell Patron? No. But I was talking to my president. I didn't want to sell it.
Okay. Do you remember the guy who, or gal or team, do you still remember them vividly, who told you that it will only sell, it will never sell more than 20,000 cases?
Yep, sure do. Yeah, sure do. In fact, one of the guys was the general sales manager of the whole company. And I think one of the family owners was there too when they told us that.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. You want to know how success really happens? You cultivate a well-informed, well-trained sales team. Top-producing sales professionals are knowledgeable about what they sell. They understand the market and the needs of their prospects, and they're skilled at overcoming objections. So what do you do when you're an expert in sales but not in training? Turn to Rise.com, the online training system sales teams love. Rise.com is an all-in-one system that makes online training easy to create, enjoyable to take, and simple to manage. Not only can you create, distribute, and analyze sales training easily in Rise.com, you also get tons of training content that's beautiful, well-researched, and enjoyable for learners. Help your team succeed with useful product guides, insightful market information, and a safe environment to practice real-world scenarios. Are you ready to train your sales team better? Start a free 30-day trial at Rise.com rise.com/HSH. That's rise.com/HSH. And our next sponsor. Ready to start your own business, but don't know where to start? Well, the dark days are over. Entrepreneur has just released a new online course that walks you through the entire process of starting your own business. From testing out your idea to getting funding to get your business off the ground. And here's the best part. If you go to entrepreneur.com/SYOB, you can take the first three lessons for free. You immediately get access to videos, worksheets, and quizzes. And at the end, you'll get a personalized one-page business brief on your idea that you can share with investors, partners, family members, and friends for feedback. And seriously, it's free. Check it out at entrepreneur.com/SYOB. And we're back.
You were saying, before I cut you off, sorry, about selling Patron. Yeah. And well,
the president of my company came to me, an incredible person, by the way, Ed Brown. He's responsible for 90% of our growth, I think, when I made him a great guy. Anyway, she said, JP, there's so many inquiries we have right now. I know you're not open to sell, but if you did sell, what would the price be? And I said, well, let's see, look at statistics. That statistical data showed that the highest price ever paid for a spirits company was $2,100,000,000. And that was Grey Goose several years after, right? So I said, $5 billion. So we laughed and then we hugged each other. Yeah, one day, maybe. And then not too long later, he came back and said, JP, at the rate of our growth right now, we have someone interested for how about $5,100,000,000 valuation on the company. And it was Bacardi. Great people. Bacardi was the minority shareholder of the company. So we had experience with them for many, many years. When Martin died, they took over his trust portion. So they had a nice piece of the company. So because we had a great experience with them and we believed they would continue to help the world out by having Patron, still look at charities the way we do, take care of our people, especially in Mexico, the way we take care of them, we really take good care of our people. So we thought this is perfect. And of course, the money is good too. And then he said, and JP, you're chairman of America's forever. I said, well, that's great. It doesn't pay anything. And then, but you get free Patron forever. Great. You know, he said, you can't get more than a couple hundred bottles a year. And then of course I had a non-compete with them for so many years in the tequila business, but they were great people. I think the people at Bacardi did a great job with Patron and our rum, our Pyro rum, other brands they had. And I'm very, very pleased that they're able to take it to the next step. And nothing will please me more to see them even grow larger, because that was my baby. Watch my baby grow.
It's amazing. You've had this incredible success. And I love it because you struggled. You know, you went through those struggles of so many, all those entrepreneurs. I love it. But you also said you started other things that didn't work.
That's correct.
And what were those? What were some of those businesses that didn't work? And were there any lessons you kind of learned? Because it seems like to me, you just kept going. And like so many people get thrown off the tracks by a failure or, you know, losing.
It's like being fired. If your audience has a chance, pick up the documentary, Good Fortune, the documentary. It was done about 4 years ago on me, showing how to get fired by companies time after time after time and not giving up, okay? It's just something to see there. But when you take a look at life and all the things that you try, I thought, hey, this could be easy in another area. But you got to look at the positive part. The movie shows, by the way, the documentary Good Fortune, how I was fired from three big companies. Why? Didn't give up, right? So we take a look at everything. So I thought, what the heck? But later on, there's a reason. Had I not been fired, I learned something different from all three companies that let me start Patron. I mean, let me start Paul Mitchell. So maybe there's some fate. Maybe there is a God there that's looking after his guys, okay? And maybe things happen that we don't know. But as long as we have a big heart and we give back, and that's the whole secret is to give back. Yeah. I said, okay, telecommunications was pretty big in the mid-1980s, reselling. We're from a phone company, you'd buy it, let's see, at 4 cents and resell the customer for 8 cents. I thought, oh, that's great. So I entered that phone business, the reselling business. Well, lost a bunch of money in that. And then I did something in oil and gas as an investor, not knowing what I was doing. Lost some money at that. Tried the boat business. Get in the boat business. Oh, great times. Lost money at that. On the way, I lost money. But what I did was I invested only off profits. I never, ever took out a loan. I never mortgaged anything I have. So please, I would like to share that with your listening audience. Don't ever mortgage your future. If you want to start, if you have something good going now and you want to start something else, Do it off the profits. Don't reborrow. Because during tough times, people that mortgage their futures go out of business. So try and grow as you can do it organically yourself. Very, very big thing. And if it's not going right, and this has happened to me before where people have ripped me off. I mean, flat out stole from me, right? When you catch somebody doing that, walk away immediately. There's nothing that you're going to just change. Just cut it off and change it. And you'll get disappointments along the way. There's a lot of people I've tried to help along the way and have helped that all of a sudden just were disappointing. Either they didn't pay it back or they weren't appreciative of all. So what you got to know with your heart is whether you have a bunch of money or whether you have nothing. Whatever you give, give it with the idea in mind that I'm going to give it and my thank you is going to be the fact I'm helping somebody else out. Because whenever you could give to others to make their lives better, and you don't even need a thank you in return, you feel better. So if ever that happens, you loan someone 10 bucks, 20 bucks, 100, 1,000, any amount, and they don't pay you back, they're probably embarrassed, but it's okay. Get it off your shoulder. Forgive them. Get it off your shoulder and move on until they pay you back.
You know, I love that coming from you because I really want to know you've achieved, and this shows how success happens. You've achieved success when you look at it financially. I mean, unprecedented in terms of numbers and businesses. But it seems to me that's not really what brings you happiness. Because going back to that first day, like you said, you would go down to, you know, the restaurant and have a tequila and people liked you. Like, what really does the dollars bring you happiness? What is it that in your life now? Because you generally seem like a really happy, like, person, which you don't find that all the time.
Very good question. In my life now, I'm a very happy person, but do understand when you've been homeless a couple of times in your life, down and out, no place to live, you even had an apartment, you're happy. Man, I got food 2-3 times a day. But and that's happiness, but also to share with your people of the past and how it affects you in the future, right? Had I not worked for those three companies, which are told about in Good Fortune, had I worked for them, I wouldn't have had exactly the knowledge I needed to start Paul Mitchell, let alone with $700. Let me go back to telecommunications. I lost money at it, but about a little over 10 years ago, I had a new shot at getting into telecommunications with the company now we know as Rocket is my new one, Rocket. It's been around now for a few years, but Rocket Mobile, you go online, R-O-K-I-T Mobile, where it was a different shot. How do you get telecommunications to more people's hands inexpensively, but give them extra things? For example, now telemedicine. If you're a customer, or even if you're not a customer, you go on the Rocket app, punch in telemedicine, and get telemedicine. Telemedicine means 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. You pay a monthly fee of $9.95. That's it. That one monthly fee covers your entire family. Even if you don't have a Rocket phone or a Rocket service, you can still get that app on there. And then you pay like 30 some odd dollars whenever you have the doctor visit. Now, the doctor visit could be you're looking at the doctor like we're looking at each other and he's looking at you. So for minor things or flus or whatever, chances are the doctor's going to say, do this, do that, or I'm going to write you a prescription. Here's the closest pharmacy. Go pick it up. Well, that's a lot better than a couple hundred dollars for a doctor's visit. And you could do it at home where many times you can. So all of a sudden that was like, wow, people love that. And then we looked at our country and the world for how can we get in their hands a very advanced telephone for several hundred dollars opposed to close to $1,000. And we came up with the phones and the solution. They're very, very advanced. Then we thought, what would people like in the future? How about having a phone? And on your phone are 3D movies from the major studios. So we went ahead and made alliances with the major studios and got their 3D movies. And now you can be someplace and watch it right there as part of one of the apps we have on there. And now we're going to Wi-Fi. In fact, one of the first areas we're doing is one of the great successes of being homeless. I was homeless, so it helps out. It is a place we have in Austin, Texas here at home. And it's called The Community. It's part of Mobile Loaves and Fishes, a community. We, the community, pitched in. We built 240 homes, all little homes, all different looking. Kitchens, big centers, entrepreneur centers that we're building now that I just got, aqua centers. We have metal shop, wood shop, auto shop, everything you could imagine. So the people that live there could have work to do, something to do to get into. The whole community pitched in. In fact, Alamo Theater even gave us a big outside movie screen. And it's all organic food, organic vegetables. They eat organically, organic eggs coming out of the garden, and it gives them a chance. The first people we accept the priority is if you have not had a shelter for 1 year or if you're disabled. We take those that need it the most and put them in there. And the results are phenomenal. People are straightening out their lives so well that we're ready to start our next 400 homes in the land right next to us.
That's amazing. I know one of the quotes you're known for or mottos is success unshared is failure.
That's
and
so
it
true.
Seems like you've lived that since day one with $700, you know, with bringing your partner in and sharing that and then sharing with the salon owners. And it really seems, is that how, you know, live your life even more so?
Yep, the continuation. But that started when I was 6 years old. We had nothing, my mom, my brother, and I. And it was Christmas time, deadbeat dad, so we didn't even have a dad. We went down to Los Angeles, downtown LA, Christmas, for the little merry-go-rounds and all that. We thought we were the luckiest kids in the world. Santa Claus was there. And my mom gave my brother and I a dime and said, boys, hold half of it each and go put it to that guy ringing the bell with a bucket. And we did. And we said, Mom, now remember, this is not, you're like a 1950, okay? Because we're kids then. You know, your parents were even born then. Anyways, long story short, we said, Mom, that's a dime. That's two big soda pops and three candy bars. And that's what that would buy in 1950. Why do we give it to that man? And she said, boy, that's the Salvation Army. And there are people that don't have food or places to live. We don't have a bunch of money. In fact, all we could afford this year is 10 cents. But boys, we gave something. Always remember that there's always someone that needs something more than you. If you could have money, great. If not, volunteer some time. And I never forgot it, even during my days when I was riding with my good old biker buddies there in our bad boy days, let's put it that way. At Thanksgiving and at Christmas, I was at Griffith Park in line helping serve food to the homeless and everyone that needed food I helped to serve. That was what it just kind of stayed with me, my mom said. And every time I do something, even though I had very little myself, and I didn't take credit for it, I just did it and walked away, that it just made me feel good. There's a time in a coffee shop, and you'll see that in Good Fortune, where these kids just didn't have money. Okay, they just needed it in the moment. I took care of everything for them, gave them a few extra bucks, take some food home, never let them know who I was, even when he was trying to find out who did it. And I just walked away. But in my heart, I knew that I did something for someone else asking nothing in return. Now, obviously, I'm a child of the 60s because I'm of the age, right? So the 20s and so forth. But even as a child of the 60s, I'll tell you this, there's nothing you can smoke out there that'll get you higher than when you do something for somebody else and ask absolutely nothing in return, what you do get in return. And that's one of the reasons too, again, with rocket phones, rocket things, what can we do to help out all the people and be able to do it in such a way with more quality and not hurt people? So we are Wi-Fiing right now the community mobile loaves and fishes so that they can have it now, all the free phone calls they want to make, and they're online. We also are all set up with Mexico, Central, South America, Africa, parts of the Middle East, India. All have given us agreements to Wi-Fi their cities because we have a way to Wi-Fi it that's quick, inexpensive, and they have the systems they're giving us to be able to turn our systems on too. So a lot of that had to do with the history of helping people and doing really good things for them. In fact, we have more countries to turn on right now than we could possibly turn on this next year. So we're trying to, you know, gear up now to be able to do one or two countries at a time with Rocket. And that's with telephones as well as telecommunication, all the other things we talked about.
Is Rocket, you know, and in the time we have left, is Rocket where you're spending a lot of your time now? How does someone like yourself, after all these successes, how do you spend your day? How do you stay energized? I mean, I love it. You're so passionate. And is that always been you? Is that, and sorry, asking multiple questions, but how do you stay in your day?
Yeah. First of all, the majority of all my time is spent in philanthropic things. Second time is on television, showing up, taking pictures with people, signing autographs left and right. I'm on, of course, the board of directors of Paul Mitchell. I am the chairman of the board of Paul Mitchell, but I don't run it day to day, nor do I run a rocket operation. People that are much more intelligent than me. Paul Mitchell, obviously, I'm the chairman of the board and my baby, you know, so that's my interest. But the majority of that time with Paul Mitchell, even though it's very little time, but it's still the majority of my time, is in philanthropy related to what we're doing as a company to change the world. Same with my daughter in racing. Alexis is in racing and in other areas that we're going into, you know, and that's how I spend the majority of my time, is philanthropic or what in one of the businesses can be done to better the people. So it's not on a regular basis, but every now and then I'll pop up with something I think is pretty cool. And I'll share with my people at Rocket that run the operation. And they're very international. Started out in Ireland and their US offices are in California. So I'll maybe throw an idea their way that just might work really good. for the greatest good, for the greatest number. And for me, that is just fun, 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 fun. In the meantime, I'm eating right, I'm thinking right, and I'm learning so many things now that I have time in my life to read. Books I'm reading now, they were written by ascended masters 200 years ago, some in the 1930s, to get even more in touch with all of us. Because all of us are, let us call it, we are the I am, we are the beings. We're all part of God. So if you look, there's a great big bucket just full of water with fillings of little holes in it, right? And each one that comes out, that's us. We're all part of God. So it's a way of not just focusing on business, money, the news. God, the news will just tear you up, okay? I rarely ever watch the news these days.
Yeah, okay? Smart.
But what you do is look at the positive part. First thing I say, everybody, get off your shoulders anybody you hate, anybody you dislike, anybody you want to get even with. Forgive them. Just forgive them. You don't have to do it in person. You can say silently, I forgive you. But definitely forgive them. Get it off your shoulders. All of a sudden, your weight goes up. I mean, not your weight physically, but you know, just light as a feather. It's amazing what happens because you're not carrying it around. When you hate somebody or carry grief on your shoulders, you're hurt more than the other person. That was one thing. The next thing is think positively. If something negative happens, close the door on it or find something that might be perfect. Something might be positive in that person or that situation where the end result, yeah, there's something positive there and it'll come out that way and more people think that way. So these are the types of books I'm reading, the things I'm talking about. And whenever I have an opportunity to help others, like going with you on your podcast,
yeah,
you're
thank
very
you.
Respected. You're one of the top business podcasts there are, period. So I know by coming on, there's others I'm going to help out. And it makes me feel really, really good. Kind of paying a little bit of rent for not just being on this planet, but I'm 76 years old. I have the energy when I had in my
great.
Life, and I plan to go to be 125 or more. So if I look at all that, it's, well, what do I do with the greatest good for the greatest number? Do I want to slow down? No, there's no need. I love what I do. When you love what you do and who you do it with and for, you're not really working. In fact, when I slept in my car that first night with no money, just a few bucks in my pocket, is when I stopped working. So I just loved what I did. And when you love what you do, it becomes part of you, national, international.
John Paul, I appreciate so much coming on. This has been a just basically clinic in terms of for all entrepreneurs listening on this show, in terms of what it takes to be successful and just being optimistic, persistent. And you're such a great story because you've had failures, you've had major, major successes, and just so, to me, so relatable and authentic that I really appreciate taking the time. And I hope my listeners really enjoy
it. Oh, Robert, I want to throw one last thing in if I can, because I just got the news. Since I was homeless in LA, one of the many homeless groups I sponsor was Chrysalis in downtown Los Angeles. During the months of May, June, where no one could get jobs, Chrysalis takes care of homeless people off the street in downtown LA. They have another one in Santa Monica. But Chrysalis is a group that takes care of homeless people, men, women alike. We give them clothes to wear, find place for them to stay, where to go to eat, and we teach them every single day and work with them. And even during the virus, we did it over the internet, how to use the computer, how to look for a job, give them tokens to go on interviews. And we stay with them every single day until they get a job. Some of them it takes over a year to do. But a great example, in those months of May and June, over 800 of our homeless people got jobs.
That's
amazing. Because they were enthusiastic. They believed in themselves and went out there, gave it their best. If they didn't get it, they go back. They talk to their counselor. Well, how did it go? What did you say? Did you look them in the eye? You go through the whole thing again. But over 800 homeless people got jobs.
Wow.
Wow, is that great? So positive. They're trying to be positive. Believe in yourself, Robert.
I love it. I love it, John Paul. I love the energy. I love the enthusiasm. Thank you so much for coming on.
And check out really, Good Fortune, the documentary. Check it out.
Absolutely. No doubt. Thank you so much.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuckman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.